is off stage and on the air, performance number 566. Yo soy Lisa Sheps, and I am joined, as always, virtually by Nicole Shiro.
Je m'appelle Nicole.
Je m'appelle. You are listening to us on KOOP HD1, HD3, Hornsby. We are streaming live today, as we often do, at koop.org. You just stay right where you are. We'll be right back.
The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step right up. Feast your eyes on the wonders of this world.
Me round the bases, put me through my paces, and teach me all the things a slugger's lover should know.
It is Wednesday, May 27th, 2020. On the show today, we have the folks from Georgetown Palace Theater talking about their COVID-19 plans and what's been going on. And then later, we will talk to Kathy Dunn-Hamrick about her company, KDH Dance, and what's going on in the dance world. And of course, we'll have lively discussions of the world of theater virtually from Zoom, virtually anywhere. Stick with us.
The national pastime.
Okay, that was a fun song, Nicole Shiro.
I know. It made me kind of want to go, like, binge watch the whole show again.
Well, you just might have to. For those who do not know, that was Megan Hilty singing National Pastime from the show, or the concert of Bombshell, which is the show within a show from, I guess it was 3 or 4 seasons ago, Smash. Yes, and it ran for 2 seasons. And Smash was the show that you just love to hate. but it had a great cast, including Catherine McPhee and Megan Hilty. It had Christian Borle.
I was about to say, you really put Catherine McPhee before Leslie Odom Jr. or Christian Borle, because come on now.
Well, Catherine McPhee and Megan Hilty were the two leads.
I get it, but still, Leslie Odom should be given billing first. And Captain Norrington from the Pirates of the Caribbean series.
I don't know what that means.
He was the director guy. I cannot think of the actor's real name.
Oh,
but he
yes.
played Captain Norrington in all the Pirates of the Caribbean movies.
Uh-huh. Well, interestingly enough, there's another show I've been watching on the, and we may have talked about it here, on the Apple channel called The Morning Show that he is also on, and I had to
the Captain Norrington is on The Morning Show,
and I had to look him up. I couldn't figure it out, and I went he was in Smash. Well, there's a lot of Smash in the news. We're gonna smash the news up. So last week, well, this was I think 3 or 4 months ago, before the COVID-19 crisis, there was it was the Actors Fund. It was an Actors Fund benefit that was a concert of the musical of Bombshell,
right?
Which was the show within a show within Smash, and it sold out. I don't know if you remember this. It sold out within 10 minutes.
Yeah, I do. And everybody was like, "Huh?" And I was not surprised, to be honest with you.
Well, and the music is great. It's Mark Shaiman, and at that time, and actually up until I think just about a week ago, you know, they had announced that they were going to bring Bombshell to Broadway. Do you remember that?
Yes.
Well, they're no longer doing that.
No, I know, but you know what they're doing now.
I do. Why don't you tell me?
They're now going to bring Smash to Broadway.
They are indeed. They're bringing Smash to Broadway, which I have to say I think is better. One of the podcasts I listened to, I never realized this, the way Bombshell is written, it's like belt song after belt song after belt song that's
yes.
all sung by Marilyn. And they're saying that no human being could really do 8 shows a week doing those numbers after, you know, doing the numbers back and back and forth.
Probably, yeah, I could see that.
But so they're doing Smash, which is I think I like that idea better. I think it's a little bit more interesting than Bombshell. And Bombshell, for those that don't know, is a story of Marilyn Monroe. And let me go back, by the way, to the song National Pastime. So that was Megan Hilty and a bunch of dancing boys. And let me just tell you something. Now I know you have not seen the concert version of it, have you, Nicole?
No,
okay,
I only saw a little flip it kind of stuff of it.
Okay, there will be a link to it on Offstage and on the air, offstageonair.com. And let me tell you something, it is super R-rated. It's not quite X-rated, but it is racy, this number. That's all I'm going to say.
The whole Smash the series is online available.
Right, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about
Bombshell. I was just wondering if I could go back and watch it, and I digress. But, well, is it because it wasn't on primetime, so they saucied it up? Because I don't remember it that saucy when they did the number in the series.
No, it was not saucy at all in the series. But let me just tell you, there's a lot of activity with bats in this.
Oh, well, you know.
Just saying.
I guess National Pastime could mean a lot of things, not just baseball. I don't know.
Well, that is the innuendo. The National Pastime for men is not really baseball.
I mean, it's how we all get here.
That's true.
It's why you and I are here. Good old National Pastime.
That's what they say. So let's see what we want to talk about today. We're gonna keep it relatively light here in this first half because our interview with Georgetown Palace takes a bit. But let's talk about the Tonys. Do you know what they're doing instead of the Tony Awards on CBS this year?
The Grease sing-along junk?
The movie Grease sing-along.
Yes. Did you see the shade that was thrown? I mean, the article, I sent an article, I don't remember who I sent it to, and I thought I sent it to you, but I was like, oh, no. The shade of every single person commenting on this, from Lin-Manuel Miranda all the way down. I was like, what is wrong with people?
Oh, you like this idea.
I don't like the idea.
Oh, okay.
When
you say what is wrong with
honoring Tony people?
Well, right. But let's see, just to be really honest, the Tony Awards broadcast was never a big moneymaker for CBS. And so this is about money for them. Not that I'm not agreeing with them. I'm just saying that's what it is.
But there's so many people like this Bombshell that just went online, or all these different series that people are doing things that, why couldn't you ask all the performers from the last season and all these shows to do other performances and honor different people? People would be just about it. It'd be a moneymaker for them right now because we're all trapped in the house with the corona.
Yeah,
quarantine. So, yeah, I mean, I don't think it
would be a big moneymaker. I mean, I would watch it. You would watch it. All the theater people would watch it.
I don't know who's going to watch Grease. I hope it tanks on him. Sorry.
I'm with you. Well, here's the deal. I have never seen the movie Grease all the way through, ever.
You mean John Travolta, Olivia Newton-John, you've never watched it?
Not the whole thing. I catch bits and pieces of it when it's on cable. It's not my thing. I saw Grease on Broadway when it first opened, and I was okay with it. Did not love it.
I know, but once again, I mean, Stocker Channing, you couldn't sit through and watch Stocker Channing for the whole thing? I'm shame on you, Lisa.
Could not. No, I'm not a big Grease fan. I don't care who's in it.
Oh, my goodness.
I know. I admit these things on the air with you because that's what happens.
I know. I'm just like, oh my goodness. Annie. Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness.
I can't remember. I cannot remember the date of the Tonys. Was it? Oh, it's June 7th.
Yes.
So I don't know if you remember our interview with Georgetown Palace Theater. Our audience will be hearing it shortly, but you know, they were opening Grease on June 5th.
Yes.
So I almost told Ron about, well, you're going to be in competition with CBS. decided not to get into it. Me too. Well, I don't know if you know about it, but the inside, playing inside baseball, sports metaphor, the theater community was talking about Georgetown Palace's announcement about a week and a half ago to open their season in June. And we were all very, very shocked to hear that. Well, they since rethought and are opening it at a different time. But I wanted to talk to Ron Watson, who's the artistic director there, to find out what's going on, what they're thinking of, and how they're operating under COVID-19. And Nicole and I talked to them yesterday, right, Nicole?
Yes, it was yesterday.
Great. Let's listen to that interview. Nicole and I are here with the through the magic of Zoom. I've become quite the expert these days. And we have with us Ron Watson, the executive artistic director of Georgetown Palace Theater, along with Kristen Rogers, who is the director of education. Welcome you guys to Offstage and On the Air.
Thanks.
Thanks for having us.
Cool. Well, Ron, I wanted to talk to you specifically around your season. Myself and a lot of other people in the community were watching with interest when you announced that you were going to start your season in June, and we were all kind of scratching our heads at that. And then, of course, since then, you've gone on to say that you are now postponing your season. Tell us about that whole process.
Well, so, I mean, really, we were hoping that the governor was going to allow it, and we were hoping we were going to be able to make both our actors and our audience safe. That's really the impetus behind it. And as with others, you know, with every small organization, you know, we're hurting just like everybody else, and we're anxious to get back to it. But again, we're always gonna err on the side of caution and try to make it as safe as possible. Unfortunately, we really weren't given a choice. I mean, because I said the governor didn't say we could open, and so that means we can't open. But I'll be honest. There's not a single person in our organization that wasn't concerned and wasn't, you know, a little worried. But again, we were trying to, you know, make the best decision we possibly could, following the CDC guidelines, following as much advice as we possibly could. We surveyed our cast, their cast of actors, our crew, our bands, our musicians. With a different survey, we surveyed our audience, and it was pretty much split down the middle, to be honest. Some people were raring and ready to get back. They didn't want any precautions taken. They didn't want to alter a single thing. They just wanted to come back like it never happened. Balancing that out were people that were still very, very frightened and feeling that it was too soon, and they weren't. And some of them flat out said they weren't coming back, both actors and audience.
Sure.
So had we actually gone into that, we would have had, I don't know what we would have done. We had to recast in several areas. We had crew members, stage managers, people that, again, they're either at risk or not at risk and just felt it was too soon. So had we gone ahead with it, we would have had to deal with those developments. I'm not 100% sure, because it became, even before the governor said or didn't say anything, it was looking like we weren't going to be able to do it. So,
sure.
But with the governor's announcement and why theater wasn't included in that, you know, that pretty much slammed the door and forced us to make the decisions that we've had to make.
Well, I know that. So it sounds like that you guys are using the governor as sort of the official Texas governmental guidelines, whereas a lot of people are sort of thinking that the state of Texas is not erring on the side of caution, that they're being a little bit more loose with the loosening of the recommendations, and some of us feel comfortable with. I appreciate of all the surveys that you did, what was the feeling you were getting from staff, cast, crew, audience, everybody, with regards to, you know, do you follow the governor, or do you follow? And I believe the CDC guidelines are a little at odds with the state of Texas.
I mean, they are. And we were, you know, one of the questions that we asked was, would you feel more comfortable coming back if this following group said it was okay to come back? Mm-hmm. And you know, the CDC, county health officials, the governor, and the president, honestly, there was pretty divided on all of them. Some said they, virtually everybody agreed that if the CDC said it was fine, that they would trust that. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it was divided between the county health officials, although there was a lot of faith in the county health officials. Definitely split down the middle with as regards to the governor. And then with the president, it was almost unanimous that no one cared what he thought.
We're not a political show, but yes, you're correct.
I'm not making any statement. I'm just saying those are the results.
These were the results. Yeah, I'm not surprised by it.
Yeah.
I will say it's okay to make statements. I would have to mention at this point that the opinions expressed here on Offstage and On the Air are not that of Co-op, the board of directors, or the staff of Co-op, but merely our own. So what's the plan now moving forward? Because you, the one thing about Georgetown Palace, you're one of the more prolific theater producers here in the Austin area, and you're always producing musicals, which are big and difficult. And they move like a steamship does, not very easily. So
yeah.
What's the plan moving forward?
So, I mean, you know, as you know, we had Sweet Charity have its opening night and then nothing else. We shut down the next day. And so that set, the lights, everything is sitting idle on our stage. So right now, my plan is to stay dark as far as a live theater goes, until it's safe to come back. Once it's safe. And I also want to say that I said this in our statement as well as every email to my cast members, just because the governor says we can, that just means it's legal. That doesn't necessarily mean that we're going to fire it up. Unless we can make it as safe as reasonably possible, we're not going to do it. And that includes, we're actually working on our guidelines as far as like the disinfectant goes and all of those things. We'll have those procedures posted as soon as we all agree on them. Because I don't think there's anything that can be served. No one is served best by publishing something that we can't execute.
Correct.
So we want to be thoughtful, make sure that these are safety guidelines that we can actually do routinely. Because I don't want to say I'm doing something and then I'm not going to do it. That doesn't help anybody, and really that just makes you look bad and doesn't help anybody's safety. So Sweet Charity is hopefully going to be the next show that we do as soon as it's safe. The government allows us to reopen and it's safer to do so. In whatever capacity restrictions, we want to give Sweet Charity a couple of weekends of performance.
Sure.
Of course, Carousel was the first show in production that was first show on our season that we actually had to postpone to a later season. And then Mamma Mia was next up on the stage. I've gone ahead and just, I can't leave that cast hanging anymore. So we've moved them back to February. So we've just begun displacing some of the shows that we had announced for our next season for 2021. So Mamma Mia has moved to February. And then Wizard of Oz has actually been moved to the following summer of 21. And so that's actually going to displace a different show there. Grease has been moved again as well. That was going to be at the end of our summer, and that's been moved back to the middle of September. I'm hoping we're there. But
would again, Grease be would Grease be the next thing after Sweet Charity in your best case scenario?
It's probably the more realistic scenario. Providing we're all back, you know, providing we do get to go back in September, we would open with redo Sweet Charity. But unfortunately, I mean, we've also got Elf planned for Christmas. So it really depends on when we can get back with Sweet Charity.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and it's possible, you know, I don't want to do this, but it's possible that if we weren't to be able to get back and we would, it'd be time for Elf, we might not get to do Sweet Charity at all. I mean, that's certainly a possibility. It really just depends on when we can get back and when it's safe to get back.
Sure. Well, what I love, what I read on your website and your announcement is that you're sort of going back to your roots for the time being.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The Palace operated is in fact, for when it finally closed, it was in the 80s, it was the longest running movie theater in Texas.
In Texas. Because I don't know if you know this, but Texas is a relatively large state.
Massive.
I was just about to say, I didn't realize it was a whole state. That's really, that's some cool history.
That is.
I knew it was cool history, but that's really cool history.
Yeah, it was the, it, I said it ran forever. In fact, when they first built it, it was actually meant for the, just the moving pictures, the silent pictures. And then the talkies came out fairly quickly once it opened. And so they had to scramble and put a tile, an acoustical tile ceiling in there so they could actually have sound. But again, it renovated, they renovated it in 1936 to add the Art Deco to give it more of a modern look at the time. And then, like I said, it ran all the way into the 80s. And so the number of, it was one of the better things about working at the palace is so many patrons come in and tell us that they had their first date or they had their first kiss right there at that ticket booth or up there in the balcony, and they remember what seat. And it's just, it's amazing that we've still got that continuity going.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead. Sorry.
That's great. So yeah, movie theaters are allowed to open, and they've been deemed as, you know, safe as the word. So we're going to open, we're going to have social distancing. We're actually going to start outdoors, which should be a little bit better. We're actually going to start, I believe we're going to start with the movie Grease, the first one. We're aiming for June 5th. We should have tickets on sale for that soon. We've got some logistics to work out with our ticket buyers, because this is a fairly new idea. So with our ticket website. So we've got to get them prepared, because I still want people to be able to reserve their seats. It'll be social distance. We're actually going to do it in the parking lot behind the palace.
Right.
So it's going to be, hopefully we'll have a big inflatable projection screen, and we'll do rear projection so we can start right around sunset. Going to have some live music out in front of it just before the show. So it's going to be a great time. I really hope people can come out. We'll space. I went out and measured with a tape measure. We can space out the parking lot, space out the chairs. People can bring their own chairs if they'd rather not sit in ours. And, you know, families can sit together. We just got to make sure that there's at least six feet between the groups around them. My staff will be there. I will be there as well. We'll just make sure it all ends up kosher, and we'll have a good time.
Well, that's great. I know that, you know, your theater, my theater, lots of theaters, we're all struggling right now. So we're really happy that you have a plan. And quite frankly, I'm relieved that you are not opening in June at this point. So thank you for that. So we have Kristen Rogers here, who's your director of education. Did I get that title correct?
Yep.
Awesome. So you guys are going ahead with summer camp and summer programs that are both in person and online. Is that the idea? Did I read that correctly?
So we're going to start online. In the education department, we're waiting a little bit on what the guidelines, because the governor had promised that there would be very specific summer camp guidelines. We were waiting on that a little bit, in that time, looking at CDC guidelines and, the American Camp Association put together a pretty comprehensive guide as well. And then just looking at, as other states released their guidelines and kind of trying to come up with our own plan that, you know, once Texas announced, we would be able to see what fit. So when the governor, she said, yes, we can have summer camps, we looked very quickly to what the guidelines were, and there aren't a lot of specifics in terms of how to run summer camp. So
figure it out,
which, you know, is fine. It's not necessarily his job to tell us how to run our business. I get it. So we were looking at all of the things that we were hoping to try to do to keep kids and, campers and staff and everybody safe. And we just made the decision that it was important to give ourselves a little bit more time, to prepare for that. So we went online for the month of June. So we have four different camps for different ages and different kinds of interests that will run solely online from June 1st to June 26th. And there's a little bit of something for everybody. There's one camp that's focused on a show that was very recently a musical that was written specifically to be rehearsed and performed online through Zoom and those kinds of platforms. There's a sketch comedy camp where kids can learn kind of how to write their own sketch comedy skits and then perform them. And they'll throughout the month be recorded and at the end be compiled into sort of their own sketch comedy show that they've created, written and performed. And then there are two different levels of a sort of musical theater audition camp where we're really going to take students through how to craft an audition for different kinds of musicals. And we'll do that, giving tips for how to do that in person and how to do that if you have to do a video audition, as seems to be, will be a little bit of a future endeavor for at least the time being. So we're kind of doing that for June. And then we are preparing to run some of our in-person camps beginning June 29th. We're going to, as Ron said, we're working together to make sure that we have very specific guidelines and procedures for how we'll do that. In our case, it'll probably include, you know, drop off at the curb and no adults coming in the building at all, limiting numbers and group sizes and not mixing groups. Of course, all kinds of advanced, increased sanitation procedures and things along those lines. So we're hashing out all of those details and plan to release them soon so that parents know what to expect when they're choosing to sign up for one of those in-person camps.
I have an idea for you if you'd like to listen to it. I think that as the kids come in, if you give them a hydroxychloroquine and wash it down with some Clorox, I think that perhaps that, and then and have them do that outside in the sun.
Right.
Should be covered.
Yeah.
Totally fine. Yep.
Well, you may want to let the listeners know that was a joke.
True. That was a joke.
So we're not in the news.
So that's great. And actually, I will say, especially for the musical auditions, so many of us are doing that anyway, COVID or not. Because it just makes the audition process so much easier with us having lives. Well, we've spent a lot of time, so we're out of time, but where can folks get more information, not only about what's happening at Georgetown Palace for your season and your performances, but also for the education? How can people find out information?
So georgetownpalace.com is the website. And of course, you can find us on Facebook if you just look up Georgetown Palace. Increasing our social media presence. Also, we're also having an online auction, and then we're also having our Palace Plays On. That was another thing that we've done, is we've moved a lot of our content online to help,
sure,
you know, help keep people, you know, keep our actors performing and keep our patrons seeing the wonderful things our folks are able to do.
Great.
Palace Plays On, the next event is May 28th, this coming Thursday.
Awesome. And people can get information there at georgetownpalace.com.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Well, Ron Watson and Christian Rogers, well, thank you so much for joining us on Offstage and On the Air, and best of luck with all this stuff.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Awesome. Thanks. We will be right back. We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa and Nicole.
It's Lisa and Nicole.
It's Nicole and Lisa. So during the break, Nicole chose a number between 2 and 53. What did you choose?
I chose 17. I feel like I never choose in the teens.
Well, okay. Well, here you go. 17. Let's listen to what that is.
Let me put my gun down. This is Dee Dee Snavely, and I'm letting you know you're listening to Offstage and On the Air at KOOP Hornsby, Austin, 91.7 FM, and it beats the out of Andy Williams.
What a great choice you chose.
I just love Dee Dee Snavely.
Who doesn't like Dee Dee Snavely? There were so many articles that you sent me and other folks sent me. Oh, you know what? We're going to stick with this. There's so many articles that you sent me that and other people sent me just about what's going on in the world. And we're getting a lot of information from American Theater Magazine. But what I thought was interesting is the article you sent me about Italy.
I was about to say, is it the Italy article?
Yeah. So Italy is opening in June, the four theaters specifically. This was not American Theater Magazine. This was the LondonTheaterDirect.com. And they're thinking that UK is going to join in July.
Yeah. It's really weird what they have to do and how they have to separate and, I don't know, 3 feet behind between audience members.
Yeah. And I have to say, I've got, I don't, I don't think that theater operates well in that environment. I think part of the beauty and joy of theater is congregating people together, and that energy of actually being close to people is important for theater to be theater.
Yeah. What was the other one? There was another article, I think it was also from the Strad, from where this one was from, that was talking about them doing the drive-in theater. And some of the producers were like, this is great. And some were like, absolutely not.
I don't know. We've been getting a differing views here locally as well. And like, I'm pretty firmly in the camp that theater needs to be live. Theater needs to be in person, and it requires an audience to be theater. That's my opinion. Do you have an opinion?
I mean, I don't think the audience has to be there to be theater. I mean, if you're creating on the stage, no, I don't know.
I do. I think there's so much about the energy that goes between the audience and between the actors on stage that makes that's what makes theater special.
I do think it makes it special and a better experience, but if I'm watching a live performance that's been taped or recorded, it's different than being in the theater, but it's also not the same as watching a television show, even reality, which is not produced the same as a produced scripted show. It's very different to me.
It is different, and it is different, but to me it's still video. So when I watch a videotaped production, it is still video, and my participation as a viewer or as an audience member is lessened.
And I was just as excited watching Kinky Boots in my living room as I was when Lola let me try on the Kinky Boots with you, and we went and saw it together.
I'll tell you what, I'd be very surprised if you were actually just as excited, because if you were just as excited, why ever go to the theater?
Because I like going and seeing it closer, but I just think it gives a different perspective. I also, maybe it's because the way things are filmed, like I was just watching some of Anne, and you get to see the quick changes and behind the scenes, there's other things added into it. It just enhances my experience and what I've already seen.
Okay. I don't disagree with that, but I think it's a different thing. I don't call that theater. I call that video. Anyway, so there's so much to talk about. But there was an article in American, I don't know if you saw this one, you did not send me this. This was sent to us by Bob Tolero, about theater in the last pandemic. That was the 1918 flu.
Yes.
And theater got shut down. And I mean, theater was different to the world back then. Theater was a vital part of almost everybody's existence. And it was like TV is
going to the bar or going to a con. Yeah. Like,
right. But
it was a social stat. It was like going to church every week almost, yeah, kind of thing.
So people cared about it. I mean, I think there's a lot of people here in Austin that doesn't know theater exists, never been to the theater, and doesn't care whether it's closed or not. But this is a very interesting article, and it talked about what happened here in town and shutting down things. And a couple of interesting things came out of it. First of all, when theater reopened, when everything came back, it just came back. Like they flipped a switch. And it was if that past year or however long it lasted didn't exist. Nobody wrote about it. It was in there's no plays about it. Nothing.
It disappeared into the abyss, like a vortex of a year or something.
Erased from memory. And then they likened it, then they said that's completely different from the HIV pandemic, where there is a cacophony. There's a lot of material written about that from artistic. I just thought it was very interesting. They often talked about the playwrights that were alive at the time that never wrote about it. For instance, Clifford Odets, Lillian Hellman, Eugene O'Neill, these people were all alive and thinking people during this pandemic. I found it interesting.
It's so funny. I made a comment going, didn't Eugene O'Neill write? He didn't write anything about the pandemic.
Nope.
I thought of that. It just mind boggles me.
Yeah, me too. So I think that's all very, very interesting.
Yeah, there was a lot of interesting. Did you see the guy in Buffalo creating the drones to clean theaters, but using?
No, you sent it to me. I glanced over, but that just makes me laugh.
Yeah, but he's taking into account of actors and singing and what could be. And I was just like, God bless this little guy in Buffalo with his little drone technological world, like making it all happen. Yeah. And there's theaters testing it. I wonder where they are.
Yeah.
I wonder what theaters and sizes. I'm curious. I want to know.
So I'm going to switch gears here and talk about the Pride plays. Did you happen to see the May 24th playbill?
No, I did not.
The headline was Pride Play announces the four works streaming live on Playbill in June. And
yes,
there's a
yes,
big
yes.
old picture of Nick Mayo, Michael Urie,
yes.
and Doug Nevin. So the Pride Plays is going on as scheduled. So this would be the second year of Proud Plays, but it's going to be different, obviously. So it's not going to be in person, and it's not going to be the entire Pride Plays isn't going to be open to the public, but they are taking four pieces and they're fully producing them for an online consideration.
I think that's so great.
Yeah. So
I'm so proud of Nick. Yeah. And actually I want to say, he read one. Terrence did one last year and Nick read it.
I believe so.
Mm-hmm.
So there are the four, they haven't cast the four plays. I'm trying to look at. I don't see them.
Hold on. I think I have this article. I was Amy and I were texting.
Oh, here it is. I got it right now. Here it is. Brave Smiles, Another Lesbian Tragedy by the Five Lesbian Brothers, who are Maureen Angelos, Babs Davy, Dominique Dibble, Peg Haley, and Lisa Crone. That's going to be directed by Lee Silverman. On June 12th, they're going to have One in Two by Donja R. Love. June 19th, there will be Masculinity Max by M.J. Kaufman. And the final play is by playwright Mart Crowley. And I don't see what it is. I think it's The Boys in the Band. Is that right?
That might be right.
Yeah. Oh, no, it's called Men from Boys.
Oh, we see have boys in it. I was like, I remember a boys in there.
It is. It's honoring the playwright, Mark Crowley, who won the Tony Award for Best Revival in Boys from the Band. And that's going to be directed by Zachary Quinto. So great lineup. Nick's doing such good work out there.
I know. I'm very proud of him.
Me too. Let's take a little break and let's listen to some music from the last show that I saw Nick direct, which was the Drowsy Chaperone.
A bride and groom in a chapel may bring a tear to
love the Drowsy Chaperone. It's such a fun play.
It is a fun play.
There are so many roles I would like to play in it.
I was about to say, that's like a musical you could do so many different times and play so many different roles and just have so much fun.
Yep. Okay, so let's, we have not on our program here, even though we oftentimes do talk to dance companies, we have not really talked about dance companies and how the pandemic might be affecting them. So we reached out to Kathy Dunn-Hamrick to talk to her about what she's up to and what's happening with her dance company. And I thought it was a great conversation.
Yes, it was a good conversation. I'm glad she was on.
Great. Let's listen to it. Nicole and I are here via Zoom with Kathy Dunn-Hamrick of the KDH Dance, Kathy Dunn-Hamrick Dance Company. Kathy, it's so good to see you via Zoom.
Good to see you too.
And welcome
Thanks
back
for
to Austin.
Joining us.
Yep. Welcome back. So we've talked a lot over the past few weeks with theater companies and city officials and things like that about this pandemic, but what we haven't talked to is dance companies yet. You're our first. How's this affecting the dance world?
I'm reluctant to speak for everybody in this dance community.
Oh, I was told you could.
Well, I'll tell you what I know, though, from my own experience, is that our dance community, especially compared to other cities in Texas, is extremely independent and out-of-the-box thinking. We're not like a commercial type,
right,
you know, dance community here. In Austin, people like new things. They're willing to, not just willing, but they embrace new experiences. And so I've watched this dance community for, you know, close to 30 years figure out ways to work. And whether, because you know what, dance is always so far at the bottom of the pole anyway. And
well, tell me what you mean by that.
Well, I think as far as funding, I mean, I can't cite specific sources, but I do believe dance probably gets less funding than many other art forms. And for example, we had to advocate for dance to be included in the CARE Act, that sort of thing.
Right.
Nobody thinks about dance. And in modern dance, it's even worse. So we've had obstacles before. I mean, there are always obstacles to making work, but this community is just very creative, out of the box, like I said, and resilient. And while we're dormant now, I think it's going to pick up as soon as it can, you know. So we go to dance performances in backyards and see performances on 4x4 platforms. So we already do that. So we're set up. As far as my company, I feel like I'm maybe in the middle. So I'm small enough that I think I'm going to be resilient and able to maneuver a little bit more easily than some larger dance companies, for example, Ballet Austin or Tapestry.
Sure.
I don't have a theater. I don't have a school, you know, for training kids or anything like that. So I think we can make some things happen.
So I know from my years, I worked with Joffrey Ballet for a while. And the one thing about dance is that if you don't exercise that instrument atrophies. So are you working with your company on a regular basis to do class via Zoom or other things to make sure that everybody stays dance ready, if you will?
That's the hardest part, is staying dance ready. And it's not just the physical part, it's the mental part, because dancing is so mental. And we always say the brain is the first thing to go and the last thing to come back, you know? And we're so used to working together in a studio. We take class together, we rehearse together, and we perform together. So being left alone is challenging. Now, we did try some Zoom rehearsals because we were in the middle of choreographing a brand new piece when the pandemic hit. And those were a bust. I do not like that. Yes.
Really?
Well, it put me in the worst mood. And
that's not how you want to dance.
No, it is not. And I was getting extremely frustrated. And I would finish those rehearsals just angry. And I finally just had to go for a long walk and think about what was going on. You know, and I think there were a lot of things. First of all, it wasn't productive. I couldn't really choreograph. So I couldn't choreograph. That's the thing I do. I can't do
it.
Right.
And you're painting pictures with bodies, and you need your canvas to be able to do that.
I do. And I need them with me. Yeah. I need them in the room with me. I need to be close to them. I work very spontaneously. I just stand right up next to somebody and give them some movement, and then they give it back to me. And then I make choices based on what I see. Does it need to be fast or slow next? Or do I need it high or low? You know, so we move along like this. But I can't do that in a two-dimension. I cannot do it. I don't, you know what? I could probably figure out some ways. I don't want to. That's not how I work.
Yeah.
So, and then the other thing, watching my dancers try to rehearse, because I thought, well, let's at least keep this material we have because I love it. But they're, you know, they're in bedrooms and kitchens, and they're on tile and carpeting, and there's ceiling fans, and that's just not good. That's not good. So it wasn't even helpful. They couldn't do the movement full out. Our work is extremely virtuosic and made for big stages. Mm-hmm. And they never complained once, but I was just like, I'm done. This is not helpful. And it not only was not helpful, but it wasn't, it just would remind me of what I didn't have and couldn't do. And I had to let go of that or just be pissed off every day.
Yeah, it sounds very frustrating. Are you, as a leader of a dance company, are you talking to other dance companies here in town to sort of share stories and, if one of anything else, just cry on each other's shoulders?
No, I just haven't done that much. We're all very independent in this community, and we're all made differently. And I'm probably the only modern dance company, honestly, in town that has dancers on a 9 to 10 month contract.
Uh-huh.
So I don't have another person to talk to about that. So I have not. I've been kind of out of the loop.
So I would think with what you're describing, that can be very off-putting, and one might have good days and one might have bad days. What are you doing, if anything, to keep positive? And what do you think the outlook is going to be long-term?
Okay, if you want to send me in a downward spiral, let's talk about long-term. I can't.
Okay, never mind. What do you do to keep positive?
I do teach my Saturday. I've been teaching a modern dance class on Saturday mornings for 20 years. And I started teaching that on Zoom, and I still teach that on Zoom on Saturdays. And that, I tell you what, lifts my spirits like crazy. Just the endorphins and seeing my people dance, and the day before doing my lesson planning. So I'm either, every day, I either plan a lesson or I teach, or I give myself a class.
Yeah.
So I can be pretty far down in the doldrums until I go outside in my garage and start, like I said, dancing. And then that just really changes things for me and reminds me who I am.
Sure.
Because dancing is, it's not the only thing that defines me as a person, but it's the thing that makes me feel like me or all of me.
Yeah.
It's when all of me is together.
Yeah.
So, and I learned a long time ago, you never say, should I go to class? You just go. So I just give myself class and teach. I also teach ballet for ACC.
Okay.
So our spring semester was just over maybe a week or two ago. So I was teaching those classes online. We had to go to online, you know, around spring break. So yeah, getting to somehow teach and lesson plan and either take class. That's what I do. That does keep me positive. That's the thing. Cause you have to be around your people.
Your people. And I tell you, as we were talking before we went on the air, is the theater companies are talking to one another, and those calls that we do on Friday re-energize me because it reminds me I'm not alone. It reminds me that we're all sort of working towards the same goal. And it gives me a lot of, support. One of the things that I noticed on your website that I really liked was one of the top tabs on your website says "Stuck at Home, Move Now," and you have some. I looked at it before we got online together, and it made me smile. And it made me think what a great thing that all I have to do is just go to your website, and I have something that I can do to get me moving. Because sometimes, frankly, really just want to lie in my bed in the fetal position.
Well, maybe I should do one from the bed, because I did one from sitting down, you know, because I knew people would be screen bound or whatever. And then maybe I should do one for if you can't get out of bed, let's just do one here. But yeah, that was there was no strategy behind that. There was no, I'm going to do this thing for everybody. I just was out walking my dog Saturday morning, the first day that I was not teaching. And that we had the stay-at-home distancing orders. And I just needed to start moving. I just wanted to start moving. So I came home and realized it was time for my Saturday class. So I just did a little warm-up for myself. I thought maybe my students will like this. Well, they did. Yeah. But then so did a lot of other people. And I found out that a lot of people were doing this little simple warm-up. And so that was one motivator, at least to get myself to move, was by recording it and putting it up. So I didn't know it would get quite the, you know, people that all kinds of people would love it. And then the, when I did the screen break one, that the video editors and people who were making masks were suggesting it for their friends. So that was pretty cool. So yeah, I decided to put them, they were just all on Facebook, and then I put them on the website so people could get them more easily. And I'll have people tell me that they'll do all of them, and it takes about 35 minutes. And but yeah, just to get people moving, because I know how important it is for me. Yeah. And so if I can get anybody just to move around a little bit each day, that's all I can do.
Well, that's great. Where, if people want to see those videos or learn more about KDH Dance, where can they go?
KDHdance.com.
Kathy, thank you so much for joining us here. We just love having you on this show.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
That Kathy Dunn-Hamrick. You know what? What our audience doesn't know is we spoke to her for about 15 minutes before and 15 minutes after that recorded conversation. I just love talking to her. Before we go, I want to remind folks that the Greater Austin High School Musical Theater Awards online ceremony is happening Sunday on the 31st. You can get more information at thelongcenter.org. I know that I don't want to miss it. So we've done it, Nicole. Another week in the can.
I know.
Again, there is no backstage at offstage because we are backstage. But you can like us on Facebook and tweet us and all that stuff. We will send it to you every week if you go onto the podcast. And how can they get us easily?
You just go to offstageonair.com. There's a little box in the corner. You put your your email in there, and we just, voila, arrive in your mailbox each week. You don't have to look for us. We'll find you.
Voila. All right. Well, thank you, folks, for joining us, and we will see you next week when we look at what's happening offstage and on the air. As we leave, I'd like you to listen to Randy Rainbow's latest. Well, you'll be able to hear a little bit of it. See you next week, folks.
A global pandemic. Sounds like some fictional Steven Soderbergh bullshit from 2011, right? Believe it or not, it's a real thing. People are suffering. Millions are out of work. The economy has evaporated. And worst of all, I haven't had a haircut in more than 2 months. So how does an unprepared reality TV host pretending to be the president deal with such an unprecedented crisis? I can tell you in one word.
This was all Obama.
Distraction, distraction.
This was all Biden.
Distraction.
Distraction, distraction.
And we caught them.
Distraction. La 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 la. La 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 la. How he tries to occupy your mind. To perplex you, he deflects to any shiny object he can find.
They wanted Hillary Clinton to win.
So many people fighting for their lives or scared to lose their jobs and stuck inside their houses. Thousands of people dying on your watch. And who is it you're thinking of?
Obama?
Obama! Obama!
That's the enemy of the people.
Distraction! Obama!
It is a disgrace.
Destruction!
We've done more testing than all of the countries in the world.
Anyone who wants can get a test, he shouts. A proper test, a perfect test. Where the hell are all these perfect tests, he touts. There's only one thing on his freaking mind.
Sleepy Joe Biden.
Election! Election!
I'm getting really good poll numbers.
Destruction! Deception! Deception!
Over 10 million tests.
Inaction.
They've never gotten over losing to me.
We hope that you might lead us with some dignity and tact. We thought you'd somehow grow from this, but girl, you're petty.